Yeah. I'm right back at it with my brother Jay Dutch. Fresh new trash for the family, what the fuck? My man Big Derek, but we call him old school. About to get up on the mic and straight up act school. Ain't no fiction here, cause we only talking facts. If he's talking about the bucks, he don't cut him no slack. No need to waste time, and let's get right to it. What the fuck podcast, ain't nothing to it but to do it. Yeah. About to turn it over to my man old school with the what the fuck podcast. Check it, yo. Nothing can stop us, man. It's what the fuck. It's what the fuck. Yeah. It's what the fuck. Yeah. It's what the fuck. Nothing can stop us, man. It's what the fuck.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Old School. This is whatthebuck.net, and we are doing crazy stuff like we used to do back in the day. We are simulcasting in both Mixlr and on Facebook Live. Now that I've upgraded my internet connection once again, I essentially, for those of you who remember the incredible pain that it was when Verizon sold out to Frontier, you guys remember my letters to the FCC and all that sort of stuff. I tried to leave them. I just couldn't quit them. Because I could not deal with 50x5 internet. So now I've got my 150x150. And so because I've got bandwidth, we can do this kind of thing again. So I want to welcome you to the show tonight. We're going to have talk about a lot of things this evening. And like I had mentioned before, I'm going to do my best to make sure that I manage my time on these windows in the chat rooms. But if you're over in the Mixlr feed and I don't get your attention or you don't get my attention, make sure you get on me when I get back over there. So first and foremost, I want to thank all of you, all of our regular listeners and supporters, and especially our sponsors, Steps Towing, Pepin Distributing, Tito's Vodka, Don Q Rum, and Steakhouse Elite. I also want to send a special shout out to this last tailgate because Commission Online of Bucks Uncensored and Stick Carrier fame brought out B4, the drink you drink before you drink. They brought out a bunch of great samples and helped everyone out so that we didn't have hangovers the next day, as well as some delicious sandwiches from Bricado's. So what you're starting to see is that spread of love across the different organizations, which is phenomenal, and it's led to a tailgate that has been phenomenal as well. That was our 90th tailgate in a row, ladies and gentlemen, and I got to tell you, it feels pretty good to have that many in our books. Now, I've said it before, our team is second to none. We've had, and we'll have a little bit of conversation about the tailgate because I actually put out an article about it. We had some feedback on the tailgate that I want to make sure that we talk about briefly, but it's with those two tailgates, with the first two tailgates of the year, the Bears and the Giants, our net proceeds exceeded aggregate $5,000. So we'll be doing the check presentation to One Voice directly. So that was a very, very exciting thing for us. Normally our tailgates will throw off between $1,000 and $1,200 of net proceeds. So we more or less doubled that. So thank you for all of your generosity and thanks to everyone who attended it. Now, this tailgate coming up, the charitable foundation that will benefit is the Gramatica Family Foundation. For those of you who don't know what they do, their mission is to provide mortgage-free, energy-efficient homes to combat wounded veterans, helping assist in their transition from the battlefront to the home front. Headed up by Martine, they're very active in that organization, and we're very happy and proud to be able to help them. So if you come to the tailgate tomorrow night, which will start at 5 o'clock, as we have mentioned before, you will have an opportunity to take care and help them. What the buck to avoid hangover? What's the buck to avoid a hangover? So drink B4 was what we used. It's got B12 vitamins and stuff like that. I don't know all the chemistry behind it because, well, I don't know no chemistry. But it seemed to help out. I'm not going to say it tasted great, but that's okay because I felt great afterwards, so I didn't care. One other point that I want to make sure I mention is this whole season is dedicated to our crew member, Richard Zeller. You guys might have known him as Stuck. We lost him this offseason, and we think about him all the time. So if you see the Stuck patches on our jerseys, that's what that's all about. So for tonight, what are we going to do this evening? We're going to talk about the game, the Giants game, how it went, what went well, what went poorly. I did a quick recap on Periscope, and then I threw that up on YouTube, which I'm going to try and do more of because, I mean, a lot of the stuff we started was in YouTube, guys, and I know a lot of folks from there, and people seem to like having the small snippet form factor as well. So I did do a summary there. I did go back and watch the game. We'll talk about that game. I also want to give a couple shout-outs to Chris, Karma Knuts from the Buckaholics. He got some notes put up about the game that were just fabulous. If you're not in the Buckaholics group, get over there. They were great. The film work that I've seen done by Real Bucks Talk as well as by Stephen Che has all been great. Now, what does all that film work mean? What does the team actually look like? What was high and what was low against the Giants? And what can we look forward to going into a quick turnaround with the Patriots? We'll also talk a little bit about the injuries and the recent release of Jack Smith. Now, let's actually talk about Jack Smith. I saw a lot of people surprised by this. You guys shouldn't be surprised by this if you listen to anything that was said during training camp. Jack Smith is a speed end. He had multiple injuries. Last one to the ACL, came back, had another injury that he had to get cleaned up. It was just a little thing to get cleaned up. When you're a speed guy and your knees start to go, that is a huge risk. And I said it then. I said, listen, I hope this isn't the case because Jack seems like a good guy. We love it when he's out there on the field for sure. But if your speed guy's not speed anymore, then he's not your guy. And he only got in, I think, 7 plays. Didn't look fantastic when he's out there. That's not the biggest deal. The bigger concern is if he was supposed to look fantastic. And that's the part we don't know. We don't know where he was supposed to be in his recovery from that injury, that recovery process. If he was supposed to be able to go full go and he wasn't going full go, that lets them know they have a problem. Now, when you look at the fact that they had to reactivate Doug Martin, they took their gamble on Mark Cook's son, Alan Cross, threw him out there. Now he's back on the practice squad. But if you don't have a fast guy who's a speed end, then that just doesn't make any sense. So I wouldn't be shocked. So Bucks Princess, I see you over there. Kurt, all you guys in the Mixler chat room, I appreciate that. Rick H. So you guys have the audio going over there. The folks over here on Facebook, I appreciate you guys being in here as well. A couple of notes about from last week. Our tailgate is fan-friendly, not just Bucks fan-friendly. We had some feedback from some new folks saying they were turned away. I addressed that in, I think it was in the Stick Carrier group. We don't ever actually turn anyone away. What we do is we stop accepting the recommended minimum donation because we can't guarantee a service level. If you come in, you know, 30 or 45 minutes before we leave and 30 or 45 minutes after the food has been out and we're not sure that we can guarantee you're going to get a plate or you're going to get the kind of drinks you need or any of those sorts of things, we don't want you to give us money expecting service that we can't render. So I know there's a misunderstanding with a couple of folks, and I think we've addressed that. We're hoping to see them come back to the tailgate. But it also surfaced another issue that that I'm not necessarily open up for conversation, but you guys are welcome to tweet about it. We can talk about it on social media. I don't want to take up too much time on this show about it because I know we're going to talk about football here more than the tailgate. But the question about why we allow visiting fans at our tailgate, this is not negotiable. This is not something that's going to change over time. This is part of our DNA. We believe the game experience is for everybody. We had a ton of Giants fans at our tailgate. We also had a ton of Bucks fans. We had some random ass Patriots fans. We had some Cowboys fans. We always have that mix. It's always going to be that way. And I posted a thing in the article today. We had a person put up $50 to any Giants fan who would take a pie to the face for pediatric cancer. And a guy stepped up with his jersey and absolutely took that. And we have made friends across the league. And that is not going to change. So, if you are on YouTube, get out there, check out Real Talk Perez. He went in on me a little bit about it because of what I said about the fans in Tampa, because I was defending the fans in Tampa, actually. And we'll talk about Vegas briefly, Sin City. You know, obviously our thoughts are with everyone from Vegas, anyone who has family and friends in Vegas. I'm not a religious guy, so me sending prayers doesn't do any good. Any of you who are religious, certainly send those prayers. I would encourage more than prayers. I would encourage action, but that makes me someone who wants to be political, and that's just not something I want to do on this podcast. So, we will not discuss banning Philly fans. We have a simple first rule. Don't be an ass, right? And we set that bar pretty low because I'm an ass. Lots of the guys in our tailgates are ass, right? But we want to be friendly to each other. That's the trick. You know what I mean? But yeah, if you get out there to YouTube, Real Talk Perez winning on me, look at the video. Look at my video because it's on mine on What the Bucks video channel. Look at what I said after the game. We'll talk about a lot of those points here as well. And then see if you thought I was inappropriate. But I got a little bit tired of thank you, Nikki. I appreciate that. I got a little bit tired of hearing people from out of town talking shit about Bucks fans this week. Now, you guys know, if you've been with me for any period of time, you know that I am probably the worst about beating the crap out of Bucks fans. I think that we have a very fair weather fan base. I think we are almost identical to Seattle, which is interesting because we came in at the same time, in that when we're winning, we have a huge fan base, and when we're losing, everyone disappears. Now, that happens. We've been losing for the better part of, well, more than a decade. It shouldn't surprise anyone that we don't have 100,000 people who are clamoring to get into the stadium. I've said it before. I think we have 35,000 to 40,000 people I'd put up against anyone. Cleveland, Green Bay, wherever. I don't even care where they're from. But outside of that, those seats are going to get filled by the biggest dollars, right? And if if I have a friend who bought tickets and he can sell it for five times face value, I don't get to judge other people's fandom, guys. And this is something I don't understand why everyone else thinks they can do. Oh, well, if they're doing that, then they're a fake fan. Listen, man, I'm not into that fan dick measuring. I'm just not. That's what I said before. So, you know, and Rhett in the chat room says the Minnesota fans are some of the worst he's ever experienced. And that sucks because the Minnesota people that we've encountered and the ones that I know my friends encountered when they went there were great. But your mileage may vary. I've only had one bad experience in all of my travels. It was in Seattle. So it's a really interesting thing how people want to judge. We went out for the walk, and you guys know that the new process is not just, you know, our tailgate, which is, I think, you know, phenomenal, but it's also the walk that the stick carriers have instantiated. We got out there. We had this huge crew, and I was videoing live. I know a lot of people doing live videos, and I saw a comment immediately, and it was, man, this crowd's not even hype. What kind of walk is this? From someone in a state four states away or something. And I was like, we've been out here since 7 in the morning. The fuck are you chiming in about? Shut up. We got a 2-mile walk that we've got to do. It was intentional. I am very proud of the Bucks fans who were at that game. I was proud of the folks at the tailgate, the folks in the walk. We walked through the whole concourse. We had people cheering. We had everything going on. And in the game, and a lot of people said, well, it sounded like a Giants home game. Go fuck yourself. No, it didn't. Yes, there were a lot of Giants fans there. And yes, when they did something good, they made noise. Because guess what? That's what fans do. If you've got 5,000 people cheering, it makes noise. That's the way it works. So, to the Bucks fans out there, new ones, old ones, tall ones, short ones, fat ones, skinny ones, I don't care. Thank you. Thank you for being a Bucks fan. It's not always easy. But I'll tell you what, I think we're building something special. And I'm looking forward to the night game. As much of a pain in the ass as night games are, I'm looking forward to it. Because I think we're going to have a fun time out there. We get a chance, and we talked about this at the tailgate. Going into the Giants game, after the Minnesota game, I went on a bit of a tirade at the halftime of the Minnesota game because fans were already ready to blow up the season. Hell, they were doing it. I had multiple people on my Twitter feed at halftime blowing up the game against the Giants. This game's over. All the normal shit, right? I don't understand why people have to get walked off the ledge like that. Sorry. Oh, shit. What just happened? Sorry, guys, if you're on Facebook, I don't know what just happened. But in Mixlr, everything's good, so I'm going to keep going to Mixlr, and hopefully Facebook will come back to wherever the hell it is, because I don't know what happened. Oh, there we go. I just scrolled up. The Facebook comments are not auto-scrolling, guys, so that's why I'm having a problem getting your chat. I apologize. The Mixlr chat room's working better. So if you want to participate in a chat, you may want to hop into the Mixlr chat room because I can actually see it. So apologies with the new tech. The auto scroll is not working. Anyway, what I said at the tailgate was against the Giants, if you beat the Giants, which we did, all that's going to be said is you beat a team that hadn't beaten anyone. All of the pressure was on us. It wasn't on the Giants. And I knew that coming out of that game, that would be the narrative. Especially with an eking out a win. Now, I had hoped we wouldn't eke out a win. I had said before the game to a number of people who asked, I thought we needed 24 points to win. I predicted, I think, a 27-21 victory. But when you go out there and you don't convincingly beat that team, that doesn't raise the bar. That doesn't lift the level. Right now, I absolutely believe a win is a win is a win is a win. And thank you, Rick, for making the Obed Ariri and Donald Igwebuike comment in the chat room. I am one of probably four other people who would get either of those references. My mom actually wrote into a contest back in the day to give Obed Ariri a nickname, and she wanted to go with Tip. It's a long way to Tip Ariri, was her joke. And if any of you got that joke out there, you are clearly over 60 years old. And that's awesome, because I don't think I have that demographic covered very well with this show. But coming out of that game, what we set up at 2-1 was a chance to measure ourselves against what the best in the NFL is declared as, which are the New England Patriots. Now, I don't care if the New England Patriots are the New England Patriots that they've always been, if they're as good as they always were. And Tampa Bay Trey from PewterReport.com, you guys know Trevor Sikkema, he kills it on PewterReport.com. If you're not following the guy, follow him immediately. If you're not reading his articles, read them immediately. He did the matchup or the preview this week, and it was phenomenal. And essentially, he goes into an entire page of what the Patriots have been and then points out it doesn't matter what they've been. That's not what they are now. Tomorrow night at 8:25, we get to see who they are tomorrow night at 8:25. We get to see the players that are healthy, that aren't healthy. We get to see the execution that happens that night. And we get to see our Buccaneers measured against a good measuring stick, who, by the way, just got beat by the Carolina Panthers, who no one gave a chance against them. At some point, folks, this concept of parity is going to set in with everyone, and we're going to realize that the difference between the best and the worst is a really narrow sliver. And that's okay. Because you can only beat the team in front of you. And that's what I said in the recap against for the Giants, which is, hey, I didn't like the way that game worked out. I loved the start. I thought that the offense went to shit in the middle and the defense ran out of gas. But somehow they found enough to get the game won. And that's all that we can ever hope for. Sure, you'd like a pretty win. You'd like to go stomp a mud hole in someone's ass. But you don't always get that. Sometimes you're the hammer and sometimes you're the nail. Bucks Princess just said it well. The difference between 6-10 and 10-6 is razor thin. And it really is. And you look at the poor Giants who've lost on walk-off, essentially field goals, 2 weeks in a row. That's brutal. Now, I don't care because I'm not a Giants fan. But, you know, there but for the grace of Nick Folk, who, by the way, for anyone keeping track, and I'll give my normal get-out-of-jail-free card. When I make a comment about a player, it's not an indictment of them as a human being. It's an indictment of what I see them doing on the field, all of that normal stuff. I see you, Khalif. I don't care that he made the final kick. He still would have left his pads in the locker room. I don't care if we sign Pat Murray. I don't care if we get Martin Gramatica back out there. I have said before, I am fine with not even carrying a goddamn field goal kicker. I hate kicking. Everything about it is terrible. I don't know if we're cursed. I don't know what the situation is, but Nick Folk was terrible that night. Now, fortunately, their kicker actually wasn't great either, but holy shit, guys, this is just ridiculous what's going on in the kicking game. Now, for Dirk Cutter at the end of that game, as the offense is marching down the field, Jameis drops a beautiful pass to Cameron Bray, gets us down, and we take knees. I don't know how Coach Cutter crosses his legs. His balls are so big. Do I know that that's a really sound approach? Yes, you don't want to risk a turnover. You get the ball set up on the hash you want. Like, all these things. I understand the concept. All of us should, right? But that's all predicated on you believing for an instant that that kicker can actually make the kick. And I sure as hell didn't believe he could. I sure as hell believed in our offense. I thought that our offense was clicking. And I would have given the back who was averaging 5 yards a carry, and yes, I know he had a 36-yard carry, which bolstered his average. I understand how math works. But I sure as hell would have given him a couple of carries. Because if I had to have that sumbitch kick, I would have liked him to kick from the half-yard line where we got the ball with Mike Evans and couldn't make it into the end zone. And we'll talk about that at some length, I'm sure. But to go ahead and tease that before Mark Cook calls in and potentially blows up the entire laptop as I try and do too much. And Nick, I'm with you. Go for two, have anger kickoff. I'm totally on board with this no field goal kicker thing. Now, I know that hurts you tremendously at the end of a game. You know, you get into long field goal range, 60-yard field goal range, Matt Bryant, you know, legendary range. And if you don't have a guy that can do that, then there's no point. That's not even part of your strategy. But if you know that in advance, it doesn't matter. But anyway, back to the Mike Evans touchdown that wasn't. Another area where Real Talk went after me on was I had the audacity to call into question Coach Cutter. I love Coach Cutter. I love Coach Smith. I think we are very fortunate to have both of those gentlemen. I think they have forgotten more about football than I will ever know. That being said, Coach Cutter does fall into guru concepts sometimes, in my opinion, where he starts trying to outsmart himself. When you're on the half-yard line and you've invested in the offensive line that we have, you don't take a half-yard and turn it into a 6-yard required toss sweep to the short side. You just don't. And he's done it multiple times. I don't understand. That's not fair. I do understand the idea. The idea is to give your running back an opportunity to spread the defense out, see a seam, hit the seam. But the way we have run it, it just simply doesn't work. And I don't understand why there's a seeming fear of power football. I just don't know. And so that was frustrating. Now, on third down on that drive, Jameis did hit Cam Brate in the hands. It was just a really hard pass. So you could argue it's an execution issue. The play call was fine. They still should have got a touchdown. And that's not a horrible argument, mind you. many problems for football teams do come down to execution. But I think that sometimes we make things more difficult by what we have to we have folks have to execute. So Princess in the chat room says, I just think that even if the Patriots aren't who they were before, it would be so good for the team and fan morale to defeat the reigning Super Bowl champs. No, I agree. I think that the reality is you measure yourself against the perception of that team. If the Patriots came in and played like dog shit, but they were undefeated. Yeah, you hear some people say, oh, well, yeah, well, they were undefeated, but they played like dog shit. But there wouldn't be as many of them because they'd still be the reigning champions. They would have been undefeated, right? Nikki also points out that we have won 6 home games in a row, and this could keep Brady winless in Raymond James Stadium. All good points. I'm not a huge fan of the whole keep winless. I don't really care. I want to win every game that's played. So none of those things are nuances that, and it was Nick, not Nikki, that said the second one about Brady. But Patriots coming off of a loss with a very human record. Bill Belichick, one of the greatest coaches, certainly greatest, one of the greatest coaches of current era. Tom Brady, one of the greatest quarterbacks of NFL history. Yeah, they're hurting. They've had huge turnover on defense from a roster perspective. They've had significant turnover on defense. They've had significant turnover on offense as well. Yeah, and Rick says like 24 seconds ago they thought the Pats might go undefeated. Yeah, and then they came out and opened with the turd, and then they righted the ship, and then the Panthers somehow beat them. Now, I watched the Panthers game. I also watched what was the other game I watched? Some of the Saints game. And to be honest, I'm just not that impressed. And that's okay. I wasn't impressed with Minnesota, and their foot is still so far up our ass, our guys can taste the cleats. So sometimes when you watch video, it doesn't help you too much. But we'll talk about those things and what we think is going to happen. Mark Cook should be calling in directly here to the studio line. We'll see if see how timely his call in. Check and see my phone to see if he has let me know what's going on. Here, yep. So he said he'll call then, which is good. And look at that. It's almost as if he's on cue. Mr. Cook, how are you, sir?
I'm good, man. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing great, and it's good to hear your voice again. It's like a long-lost friend. It's like when I listen to James Taylor sometimes. I feel very reminiscent.
Yeah, I've been compared to James Taylor quite a bit.
I'm sure you have.
Actually, right.
I do miss not seeing you across the table, though, my friend, so I look forward to having you back in Studio 76 sometimes very soon. But I know you've been out there. You and Peter Report have been killing it over there. You guys have been producing a ton of content, as always. There's been a lot of stuff going up in One Buck Place, and that's one of the things I love about you guys is you're always present at One Buck Place. There mm-hmm. was highs and lows, the highs of the Bears, the lows of the Vikings, and then probably the mid-range of the Giants. What's going on at One Buck Place from an attitude perspective? There's all sorts of rumbles because Dirk was all feisty before. Now there's discussions about Jackson feisty. You're there all the time. How does it feel at One Buck Place with the return of Doug and all that stuff going on? Tell us about it. It's like the give us the temperature in a rock.
It feels great. I mean, listen, the players are they don't get – I'll be honest with you. After the Vikings game, they were the same as they were really after the first game. And I think it was because – and Gerald said it last week. He goes, look, it was one game. You know, yep, we stunk. We got to get better. You know, it was one game, and it was just the second game. So, you know, I'll be honest with you. I see no difference in this team's attitude or their demeanor inside that locker room every day, whether they win, whether they lose. Certainly after a game, you know, they're going to be more down and things like that, meaning immediately following the game. But, you know, being in the locker room after the Giants win, they were super excited, same as they were against the Bears. But I'll be honest with you, that week after the Vikings, you wouldn't have known that they got smoked in Minnesota. And, you know, some fans maybe say, oh, they should be mad, they should be angry and all that. But Dirk preaches the message. I mean, don't let one loss turn into two. It's over with. It's a new week. And they responded well last week. You know, how they're going to respond this week, you know, with the Patriots coming to town, you know, they're excited to play the Patriots. And it's not that they're in awe. They're not there just to watch the game and watch the greatest quarterback and one of the greatest coaches ever. You know, they're there to win and to beat this team. And they've got a belief that they can do it. We'll see how it pans out. There's a lot of X's and O's that will have to be discussed and talked about and take place tomorrow. But they're ready to go. And in all honesty, if you're going to play the Patriots in a game like this, you know, it may be better not to give it a ton of time. You know what I mean? They haven't had a whole lot of time to think about this, to be honest with you. You know, coaches immediately started working on a game plan Sunday night as soon as that game was over. Players came in, worked Monday, Tuesday, did some walkthroughs today, and they play tomorrow. So there's no time really to sit back and be in awe of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and that offense. They're ready to go, and I think they'll respond well and play well.
So going into this game, you know, you've already mentioned some of the high points, the Bradys of the world, but, you know, it's been a long time since they've had all of their talent aligned, both in the offensive and defensive side of the ball. What have you heard out of the Bucs about what they're keying on? Obviously, Gronkowski is going to be an area of concern, how they're going to try and nullify his effect as much as possible, because he's not a player that you shut down typically. What else have you heard the Bucs concerned about on defense, given that the defense, as it sits now, with the absence of Levante and Kwan, and I'll leave TJ off because I like him, but he's not Levante or Kwan. What is it that you see that the Bucs are concerned about? What are they focusing on? And what do you expect to see as their game plan to improve from the Giants game?
Well, trying to figure out a way to generate some pass rush. I mean, Tom Brady does tend to get the ball out pretty quick. He's got a quick release. But he also lets some of these longer routes develop, and they're averaging, I don't know, around 11 yards per pass play. They're going down the field more with Brandon Cooks, and with Edelman being injured, you know, that you know, means they're kind of pushing the ball down the field a little bit farther than they have. And when you do that, it does take a little bit longer for those plays to develop, and it gives the you know, the defensive line an opportunity to get to the quarterback. But as Mike Smith said yesterday, look, those things go hand in hand. Your coverage, I mean, if you can't get to the quarterback immediately, you've got to play tight coverage. You can't let your man get open. And the better the coverage is in the secondary, the tighter it is, and the more opportunities for sacks are going to come for the defensive line. But that's the big thing from Mike Smith's perspective, is how can we generate some pass rush? You know, he loves getting the quarterback off the spot and disruption, but listen, one sack in three games is not going to win an NFC South championship. I mean, they've got to figure out a way to get to the pass rush working considerably better than it has the last few games. I mean, they've got to do it. Now, Dirk, I think, or maybe it was Mike, they said sacks are like turnovers. They come in bunches sometimes. We're hoping those bunches start this week, and maybe they will, because if you give Tom Brady all day, he's going to complete passes. The good thing I said in my preview is that's okay. He can do that. The Buccaneers have a good enough offense that they should be able to match him score for score, because the Patriots defense is lousy right now. So, you know, sometimes you've got to win these shootout games. I thought last week was going to be a little bit more of that shootout type game, but they still had over 430 yards of offense in that game. So, you know, they moved the ball and had success, but this may be a game where, you know, field goals and missed field goals can't happen. It's going to have to be a lot of touchdowns, and that's kind of what I'm expecting tomorrow night.
It's going to be interesting, Mark, because you bring up a couple of really good points in that discussion there, which is coverage has to be tight. When I watched the Panthers tape, there was a lot of times where Panthers DBs were in really good position on receivers. Tom Brady does not give a shit where you are. He's going to put the ball wherever he wants to, and he's going to expect his receivers to catch it for touchdown. There was one on a touchdown. He threw the ball. The receiver was simply not open, and you've heard the phrase, throw your receiver open, quote-unquote.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't throw his receiver open. He threw a ball to an open spot and expected his damn receiver would get his ass over there and know what he was doing. And it's really interesting to watch that level of chemistry happen on the football field. But to your point as well, Brent came back, had a great game. I thought Vernon played better than people are giving him credit for. Yeah, he gave up the big gainer to Odell. But even on that play, he was in good position. It was a hell of a throw by Eli Manning, who, by the way, can kind of throw the ball pretty well.
He's not bad.
He doesn't suck, right, despite the fact that he doesn't look like he's the sharpest tool in the shed. He's pretty damn good at this thing we call football. But one of the things about pass rush is the coaches have said before they expect or they want to see a sack once every 14 throws or attempts. We're clearly far off of that, but your comment about bunches is a good one. And turnovers, like you said, as well come in bunches. Do you think their Bucs are going to be able to manufacture either of those? Even, you know, Beckwith is playing well, Bond is playing well, Lynch is playing well, Glanton's playing well. But I had Glanton marked wrong on two significant plays last week that led to scores. How comfortable do you think Mike Smith feels with his backup linebackers?
Well, I mean, he would obviously, I mean, without, you know, being captain obvious, he wants his guys. He would love to have Kwan and Levante in there. And, you know, there's no doubt this is a different defense without those two in there, regardless of how well Beckwith has played. The fact is he's still a rookie. Darius Lanton has not had a lot of NFL snaps. And so there's going to be some deficiencies. There's going to be some poor drops in coverage. I thought the linebackers didn't do a great job you know, in coverage on Sunday against the Giants. And they're going to have to be better this week because I have no idea what they're going to do matchup-wise with Gronk, if they're going to put a safety on him, if they're going to put a linebacker on him. But, you know, he's going to, you know, he's chomping at the bit if they try and put a young linebacker on him, or Devontae Bond. Are you kidding me? You know, or Darius. I don't know how it's gonna play out as far as the coverage just goes. But you made a good point, and something that Mike Smith said. The thing that Tom Brady does the best, even at this age, and maybe he does it better than he's ever done, is he throws perfect balls. He throws balls where his receivers are going to get him. They're not going to slow down. He's going to hit him in stride. He's just deadly, deadly accurate. And I don't know that enough is made of that with quarterbacks. I mean, you see a guy throw the ball. You see Jameis Winston throw to Mike Evans. Mike jumps up and catches it, and everybody's excited about this great throw. But, you know, I don't know if that's a great throw because he had an opportunity to hit Mike on a fade when they had that first and goal from the half-yard line, and they tried to run, and then the next one, that was just a poor throw. And even the one that Cam Brake could have been a better throw. But bottom line is Tom Brady is just insanely accurate, and that's what makes him, you know, besides his leadership and the fact that he's, you know, that people believe in him, and he runs a great system there in New England. He just does a tremendous job of putting the ball in the right place. And I don't know if that's something Jameis Winston will ever get. He's not going to get as good as Tom Brady because there's 31 other quarterbacks in the NFL that aren't as good as Tom Brady at doing that. But if Jameis is watching film and looking at things to improve on during the offseason, well, that's one thing I would do if I were him. I would watch exactly how much of a difference it makes when Tom Brady can put the ball where it needs to be in stride without his runners having to adjust and slow down.
I have to wonder, and when we're talking to Mark Cook, Mark Cook 1970 on Twitter of PewterReport.com, at PewterReport on Twitter, I have to wonder how much of that is just simple experience, man, because Mike Smith said what you said. I saw it on the film. Anyone who's watched the game, we've seen great quarterback play. We've seen the Drew Breeses of the world. We've seen the Philip Rivers of the world, and he is a great quarterback. People can be mad at me for saying it, but the guy's a hell of a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady is different. Watching him against the Panthers was like watching a surgeon at some points. Now,
right.
The other thing that he does, and what the Patriots were doing, and I haven't noticed them doing this as much in the past, they came out the first series, and they ran essentially spread all the way down the field. They got stalled.
Right.
No big deal. Then they came out, and they ran power eye. Weak eye. Strong eye. Power eye. Right. They showed, like, totally different personas on mm-hmm. offense.
Right.
That team does not have a persona other than the fact that whatever the hell Belichick calls, Brady's going to go out there and execute, and if it's a pass, he's going to be really accurate with it. Now, the running game of the Patriots.
Yeah.
Obviously, everything starts with the run, even when you're playing the Patriots. No one seems to know anyone who runs the ball for the Patriots. What have the Bucs been talking about with regards to their game plan defensively? Because they're usually stop the run first, make them single dimension. But at this point, in my mind, they would much rather take their chances with a running game than Tom Brady.
Oh, there's no doubt, you know, and they haven't really talked about it. I don't remember a whole lot about, you know, the defensive coaches or players talking about, you know, the running backs for the Patriots, because as you say, I mean, they're a no-name group to a degree, and but I mean, they're effective. I mean, they mm-hmm. let LeGarrette Blount walk, a guy who led the NFL in rushing touchdowns last year. And, you know, they let him go basically for chump change to the Eagles. They could have had him back easily. So they're pleased with their running backs, but you know, this is a, like you say, this is an offense that can do it all, and they're not afraid, like you say, to come out and spread everybody wide and sling it all over the field and throw the ball 12 straight times and then come back and run it 6 straight times. We've seen them do that multiple times, and they're going to figure out what works and where they can find, you know, the weaknesses in the defense, because you can look at teams on film and you can say, oh, okay, well, we should be able to exploit that. Well, the defensive coaches for the other team are getting paid as well, and they watch that same film and say, Jesus, we can't allow that to get us beat again like it did the week before. So they're going to adjust and change. And so the chess match happens really on every play, but at least every series, you know, as coaches, offense coordinators are trying to figure out what the defensive coordinator is going to do. And the one thing I do, you know, there's a lot of things I like about what the Patriots do, but they're going to do what works. And I've seen them run the same play 3 times in a row. I mean, if it's open, if it works, they don't outcoach themselves or get too cutesy. They're going to keep doing what works until the defense stops them. And I'll expect them to do that on Thursday night, if the Buccaneer cornerbacks are playing off, you know, Brady's going to come quick from underneath center, sling the ball out there, and essentially use that as a running game. And the Patriots do that as well as anybody, getting the ball out quick.
Yeah, better than most because of Brady's accuracy. Yeah,
that's essentially is a running play. And if you can get 6 yards a clip on it, I'm surprised the Giants didn't do more of it, because that's where they really found their most success. I mean, I would have just nickel and dime down the field a little bit more. But anyway, it is what it is. You know, Patriots are a great football team. This is a huge, huge opportunity for the Buccaneers. And like I said, I don't think it's too big for them. A couple years ago, I wouldn't have said that. This year, this is not too big for them. They're motivated. And they think they're a better football team, or just as good a football team.
Well, this will be the true test. I want to ask you more question about individual players, and I want to find out more about what you guys have going on at Pewter Report and with the Pewter Nation podcast and all the great things going on over there. But Ali Marpet, obviously we all love Ali. We've talked about Ali. The move to center was a big deal. Everything looked like it was going to be great and peaches and cream. Minnesota, not his best effort. This week against the Giants, again, not his best effort. Is there any concern that maybe that was a bad decision, or the coach is just saying, hey, these are growing pains and we're fine moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, you got to look at Ali, and I think the coach is looking at him as a rookie offensive lineman right now, a rookie center in the NFL, because he is. I mean, yes, he played 2 years at guard, but this is a brand new position for him, and so there are going to be some growing pains. I think they still like what he brings to the table in the run game. Boy, his snaps, he's got to be more consistent like that, because, you know, Jameis is not the quickest in getting the ball in his hands, getting the ball up and getting it out of his hands. When he's got to bend down and catch it at his ankles, that's just not good. That throws the timing off completely. So Allie's got to be more precise with the snaps. I don't think they're disappointed in, you know, his blocking, his pass protection there.
No.
Although I'm, you know, again, I think like everybody else, kind of shocked that Dirk decided to pitch the ball there at the half-yard line. Again, I tweeted, you know, that's why J.R. Sweezy is here. That's why Ali Marpet is at center. You know, to pick up half yard and run the ball in inside the 5 yard line of the red zone. I mean, again, you know, yes, the Giants were crowding the line of scrimmage. They had people filling all the gaps. They had linebackers up playing tight, but we're talking 6 inches, not 6 yards. And I, you know, again, it's easy to second guess, and it doesn't matter now because they won. But boy, had they not won, that would be something that Dirk would have to answer every single day this week going into this game. Fortunately, he doesn't, but I don't know that there's any regret there at all. I haven't sensed it at all. I think they're pleased with Ali Marpet so far.
Well, I it's good to hear. I think it's the right decision. I think we have the best guys on the field. I think it's interesting what's going on with Pamphil and Evan Smith. I don't necessarily understand the shuttling there. I don't know if you have any insight to that.
No, it's they feel like Evan, you know, it's a 1A, 1B type situation. And, you know, they feel he's a pretty good guard, and they feel, you know, he earned the opportunity to be a part-time starter. It's not ideal. I think Dirk even commented, you know, you'd like to have the same five out there at the same time, you know, consistently. But, you know, it is what it is. I haven't quite figured out exactly what that's about, other than just taking, you know, Dirk's word and Munkin's word on face value that Evan Smith has earned the opportunity to be in there with the first team at times.
Well, I think it's tough to build chemistry on an offensive line when you're shuttling it, I find it hard to believe someone say it would be nice to have the same guy in all the time when it's the guy who can determine who goes in all the time saying it. I mean, nice to do that, then do that, you know?
right. It's not like you can't.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like
he's not doing a magic eight ball. Oh, shit, this time it's Evan Smith. Okay, I guess that's what we got to deal with.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, so let's. What's your perspective? I know you've written about this. Tell us what your thoughts are going to the Patriots game, and then tell us what you got going on to Pewter Report, brother.
Well, I mean, I'm looking for, a close football game, something similar to what we saw last week against the Giants. Again, this is a football team. This is not the 2013 team that went to New England and lost 23-3, whatever it was, against the Patriots. That's a team that went in there. I don't think anybody on the team really expected to go in there and win. They kept it respectable to a degree. But this is a team, a different team. We've talked about it over the last few years. When the Buccaneers become a team that expect to win, not hope to win, then they'll be a force to be reckoned with. And I think that's what we have with this football team. Certainly they would like to be a little bit healthier. I'm concerned about most of this crazy weather right now. I mean, geez, they're talking about 60% chance showers and rain. We see how breezy it is. You know, that could affect things as well, because I feel like you know, on paper, this is going to be more of a shootout football game, but weather will determine part of that too. So,
and God knows what it'll do to our kicking game, you know?
Well, yeah. Well, maybe it'll push it in. You know, maybe it'll push those kicks straighter. I don't know. But
it can't be any worse.
And, you know, anger, if he has the wind behind his back, may kick 110 yards. I mean, the guy was, he's got a rocket for a leg. He's played well this year for the Buccaneers at punter. But, you know, I expect it to be a close game. You know, I think it's two evenly matched teams. And obviously Tom Brady is better than Jameis Winston, but I think the Buccaneers defense is better than the Patriots defense right now. I think that's fairly even, but the fact that it's home field advantage and the Buccaneers playing on Thursday night, national TV, I kind of give them the edge, and I think I picked them to win by three. So, but you can check out all of our Pewter Report predictions and how we think the game's going to go. That story's up right now. Jock Lee Smith was released today. We've got that story up. It blew up. We had it up pretty quick. A little bit of a surprise there, but, you know, he just, when we asked Dirk about, or I think it was Dirk, we asked him about Jacquees either this week or last week, everything runs together now. You know, you could tell Dirk says what's on his mind without saying, you know, words sometimes with his facial expressions. And sometimes he says things without saying things. And
yes.
He was asked about Jacquees Smith, and he was basically, well, you know, Jacquees is, Jacquees, he's trying, and you know, he's not, and again, he didn't get him a rousing endorsement, and that certainly created some red flags in our mind about what was going on. And we don't know the whole story, but Jacquees Smith, great guy. What a shame, you know, I was thinking about that this evening driving home, that, you know, here's a guy that was ready to cash in big time, right, a couple years ago or last year, you know, expecting to be that 10-sack guy, and he ends up blowing out his knee on that, you know, the first quarter against the Falcons, and you know, had an opportunity to make a lot of money, and unfortunately it didn't pan out. That's the sad part of this business is for these, you know, unrestricted or not unrestricted, but these undrafted free agents that come into the league, you know, they don't make a lot of money. And then, you know, it kind of pisses me off when I hear people bitching about players kneeling and this and that, about these spoiled millionaire brats. There's a lot of them on this football team that aren't millionaires. Now, if they play, you know, 4 or 5 years, okay, technically they will have earned $1 million, but by the time they pay their agents and the federal government gets their 35%. You know, this isn't baseball and basketball salaries. You know, there are guys that, you know, you got your quarterbacks, your, you know, Tom Brady's and the Drew Brees's of the world. And geez Louise, the quarterback for the Redskins is slipping my mind right now.
Cousins.
I mean,
yeah,
you know, those guys are, yeah, they're certainly millionaires, but you know, a guy like Jacquees Smith, not a millionaire, and the Allen Crosses of the world. So, you know, these guys, it's a shame for him, and I hate that for him. I hope he gets picked up somewhere. I hope that he goes wherever he goes, he excels, and earns a second contract. And that's where the guys make the money, really, in the second
year.
Yep,
absolutely.
Second contracts.
Well, it's tough.
As far as Pewter Report goes, we got our full game coverage tomorrow. We'll have my ever-popular fifth down segment we do once a week with the player where we ask him 5 questions about life off the field. This week we'll be featuring Ali Marpet. Last week it was O.J. Howard. Before that it was Cam Braid and Adam Humphreys. So people can go back and type in Fit Down if they'd like to, you know, find out who these guys' celebrity crushes is, who they'd like to have dinner with that's deceased, who they want to be stranded on a deserted island with. That's my favorite question so far. It's interesting to hear what people
Has
to
anyone
say.
Picked you?
Not yet, but every week it's been Alan Cross. So essentially, they're saying they want to be with me, since you know, Alan's just a younger,
Cook
less good-looking version of me.
Cook Jr. Well, Cook Senior,
yes,
man,
exactly.
I tell you what, it's good to have you back on here. Please tell Nuck Nuck we miss him, and please do get your narrow Plant City ass out here at some point and get back in the studio, because it's not quite the same without you. Okay.
We'll do that. Nuck Nuck is he's doing good. His ankle's a little sore. They put that bracelet on
tight.
A little too tight when I picked him up today. But he's got 30 days with the ankle bracelet. We'll see how that goes. I've got some people trying to keep an eye on him. We'll see how that goes. I took the keys away from his moped, so we're good on that. He can't escape on that, at least.
Just keep him near the trailer, brother.
Yeah, for sure, man.
All right, man. I'll see you at the game tomorrow.
All your good work, man.
All right. I'll see you at the game tomorrow, brother.
All right, man. Bye.
Mark Cook of PewterReport.com calling in. That's at MarkCook1970 on Twitter or at PewterReport on Twitter as well. Mark is on there sometimes, Trevor as well as Scott. Those guys do a phenomenal job. We appreciate him calling in. Now, we had some questions in the chat room while we were on interview God when he isn't busy. Rick, you are on fire in the chat room over there. Rick asked a question I think everyone wants to know the answer to, and that's why I want to make it the topic of the next conversation. Then we'll talk a little bit more to wrap up the Giants. We'll do our skulls and swords from the Giants game. We'll do our predictive MVPs for the Patriots game, and we'll do our score, and then it'll be time to get out of here. But let's talk first and foremost, where is this vaunted offense that we were sold a bill of goods on? We thought we were going to come out here and score 36 points a game, be unstoppable, all these sorts of things. The talent is there, guys. I honestly believe the talent is there. The execution is not. I don't think that coach has guru'd us out of everything. I just think it's a matter of getting a chance to execute on a regular basis. The players are open. The plays are there. They're being missed, and that comes with practice. Do I think this is going to be a ridiculous offense? Yes, I think that there are mismatches all over the field. We said it in preseason. We said it early in the year. If the front five with one back can give Jameis time and they can go doubles, there isn't a team in the league that can cover these guys. Now, what's interesting is when you look at the way the Patriots play defense, they play a lot of press man, even though their corners are not that great. That is going to hurt them if they do it against the Bucs. I don't think you'll see them do it. TB1Ton says, what the hell is with three straight runs to start the game? And I would caution people to not take sets of plays like that and make that be the thing that gets you to use an exclamation point. Three straight runs are not necessarily designed to be three straight runs. It could have been a run on first down, which is typical. It could have been an audible on second down or a check, right? And then you're in short yardage, and the run is the right call to make, right? You got to look at the down and distance in situational football. That's what you've got to look at. But when you think about the powerful offense we're talking about, Jameis has to be able to read the defense, make the throws. There were opportunities in the first half. He took advantage of them early. He got 13 points up there quickly, and then everything seemed to stall. The offense sort of fell apart. The Giants started creating pressure. Jameis and the line did not, in concert, protect Jameis, because it takes both of them working together. Jameis, the line, and his protection, whether it's the back and the tight ends or whoever it happens to be, they did not work in concert to give Jameis the time he needed to find the guys who were absolutely open down the field. That is just true. Jameis was not particularly accurate last week. But even with that, Jameis had like a 115 QB rating, threw for over 300 yards, three TDs, and no interceptions. Were there some plays that were bad, deflected passes that could have been picked? Yes, those things always happen, guys. They always happen. You cannot get fixated on that. Oh my God, well, what if such and so happened? Well, it didn't. If you go back and watch every game, you'll find plays. Oh my God, what if this had happened? Well, then the game would have been different. It didn't happen. That's the way the games go sometimes. Now, DeSean Jackson, let's talk about that. It didn't help leaving 14 points on the field. I agree. When you miss field goals, it sucks. That's why I fucking hate field goal kickers. When you can't score from the half-yard line, it sucks. Our red zone percentage, I don't know what the aggregate is on the year. Chris Fisher in the chat room may know. I think last week we were 2 of 5. We were, I think, 2 of 5 the week before. When you're in the red zone and you have an offense like this, your ass should score touchdowns. Now, admittedly, the other team gets paid to play too. But Mike Evans on that fade, like Mark talked about, was absolutely an easy throw, and it was a bad throw. The pass to break was on target, but it was a really hard catch to make. You don't have to make everything be so fucking hard. This team has enough talent to get people open, but it also has enough talent to make a foot and a half. Shit, with Jameis Winston's size, it's three QB sneaks. If you're mad about three runs, you'd really hate me as a head coach. Because one of two things would happen. I'd have Gerald McCoy as my up back, or Swaggy, but I don't think Swaggy's foot speed's good enough, so I'd have Gerald back there. And you would have to worry about Gerald McCoy's big ass coming into the A-gap with any running back behind him, and then Jameis Winston would get a chance to push the ball a foot and a half across the goal line. It would be absolutely unsexy football, and I love to throw fades. I love read corner routes. I love option routes. I love all those things. I don't need any of them from within a yard at all. I never need to pull that playbook out ever. If you can't score from the half-yard line, you don't deserve to win the game. I'm glad we did, but I don't think we deserve to. 2 of 4 in the red zone. Was that last week? Thanks, Chris. I agree. There's not a single thing sexier than a TD. I don't care how you get it. Totally agree. Thoughts on not challenging the fumble? It's funny, you know, a bunch of people are talking about it. I didn't even see it real time. And I saw the stills. It looked like it was really obvious. But, you know, in the game, I just didn't even see it happen, guys. I have to admit. So my thoughts are, if there was enough video that he could have challenged, then yeah, he should have. But, I mean, I think that's one of the things where he wanted to keep the timeouts. But I mean, those are one of those things that you screw up. You know, I don't have a real strong feeling about one way or the other. It looks like it was a blown opportunity. But I do have to admit the officiating was not particularly good either. As Gerald McCoy was held so much, it was almost like it was a dance concert from seventh grade or a homecoming dance. Now, they weren't calling a hell of a lot of holding on the other side either. I don't know whether our guys were as clean as they seemed to be made, because that's not what I watch on offense, and I didn't really go back and watch that part of the game on replay either. But Gerald McCoy could potentially file charges on some of those guys for what they did to him during the game. He was ridiculous. He was unstoppable early. So, and I hear you, TV One Ton. One thing I will say, Cutter does not seem to do that. He's not afraid to use his timeouts. I do think that the clock management towards the end was scary, but I understood the rationale behind it. Let's wrap up the Giants game. Let's talk about who you thought. Skulls and swords. You guys know the rule. One skull, one sword. The skull is the bad one. The sword is the good one. I know we're going to have a ton of Nick Folk for the skulls, and I think that's probably a good call. Someone, I forgot who it was, said, I think it might have been Rick, said, well, he also can get the sword for making the winning kick. Has anyone ever gotten both? And I don't think anyone ever has. So I think it's a good call. So who is your best player? Who is your worst player against the Giants? And then I'm going to start talking a little bit about the Patriots, and then we'll go some Conti the Skull. You're just being a dick, TB One Ton. That's funny. I haven't seen you do that in a long time, but I like it. For the Conti haters, boy, this is going to be a tough week, because I do think Conti's going to pull that coverage a fair amount on Gronk. Now, I do think Coach Smith is going to have to mix that stuff up. Good call, Chris, on Donovan Smith. I thought Donovan played well. I thought the offensive line in general played very well. They were mauling guys throughout the day. And I'm not kidding about Jacquizz Rodgers. He could have run a lot of yards. Hargraves is your new Conti. I think that's a little bit premature. I think Vernon is advancing the way he should. Oxentine, Sword, O.J. Howard, like you predicted, because he blocked well and made the one catch. Is that your call? I mean, I'm glad he caught it. He was wide open. My 11-year-old could have caught it. But I'm glad he did. I'm glad he got in the end zone. That play, or a derivative of that play, or a variation of that play, is probably more accurate. We used to run all the time with Cam Brate. And Coach actually said that in the post-game press conference. They had never run it with Howard. But they said they were ready, and it worked well. And that kind of a play, that sort of a misdirection, that reverse action kind of play, will work well against these Patriots defenders. These Patriots defenders are like a young kids in, like, let's say high school. They're all velocity, no vector right now. So you show, sell out full flow right, and then cut back to the left, and you have an opportunity to do some really good stuff. So I think that kind of a play, now they put it on tape, so you know Belichick's going to see it. So I think you can even use that as a rope-a-dope, but the reverse action, the Patriots do it all the time. They'll run an end-around fake. Brady will do some crazy little, like, pirouette in the back and come back to the other side. He surprisingly moves around a lot. Skull to Doug Martin for being suspended. Doug returning will be interesting to see how healthy he is. I'm obviously looking forward to seeing how he looks running behind this line. He hasn't done it in a while, so we'll see how fresh. Why do our corners not press on third and short? Because they're told not to. Corners press when they're told to press. They don't press when they're told not to press. I don't mean to be a smartass, but that's exactly what it is. Coach Smith apparently doesn't feel like he has corners who can press effectively in those situations. I would rather take that risk. Coach Smith, for the last 2 weeks, has been very, very happy to let shit happen in front of him. And I even jokingly said that maybe his game plan was to hope they drop the ball a lot, because the Bears dropped the ball a lot. And Odell Beckham, for all of the shit that we hear about Odell Beckham, how good he was, he had, what, four drops? It's just amazing. And Wisdom, I'm not sure what you're saying is terrible, but that's just the way it is. Oh, Skull to Mike Smith, I got you. But if your option is put him in press, get him beat, give up a touchdown in one play, or, and I hate to say this because you guys are all going to get like post-traumatic stress disorder, but go more Lovey style, more old traditional Tampa defense, and make them dink and dunk down the field. That's what Mike Smith is going to do right now, because he doesn't feel as though he can generate the pressure, or he's not comfortable doing it. And I don't have a problem with that. I understand it. He doesn't have the confidence in Beckwith yet, though it's coming, or Glanton or any of the other guys, because they don't have the experience. That's not their fault. You have to get the time to be there. Glanton over-pursued on two plays, one that led to the final touchdown for the Giants. He flowed too far with the quarterback and let his tight end drip out behind him, And I agree, Beckham's finger looked pretty gross, but it was funny he got hurt like three times in one drive and came back in and still caught the conversion that would have been had he not gotten pushed out of the back of the end zone by a relatively bright move by Justin Evans. So, but overall, I thought from a Giants game perspective, I thought we did enough to win. I think that the offense has got to get onto the point to Rick's point. They have got to start producing points to protect this defense until Levante and Quan can come back. You get Levante and Quan in here, and this defense becomes a different defense, guys, I promise you. Now, one of the things we have to be concerned about this week, we were concerned about it last week, and they ate us up for a while, and it was the same problem Levante and Quan had until they started to learn this. Linebackers have to get to their depth. The Patriots linebackers do the same thing. They don't get deep enough, and the tight end seam routes are open all goddamn day long. Brady will throw them, and Jameis will throw them. Tight ends will have a big day tomorrow, or a big night tomorrow night on both sides of the ball, and guys not named Gronkowski will also have a big night if those linebackers can't get back. Now, if the coaching staff gets them to get back, what can happen is the tipped ball, the underneath coverage can tip the ball up, and that gives your safeties a chance to come in there and ball hawk. That could be the difference. That was obvious on tape. I'm hoping that our staff saw it, can get Beckwith or Glanton or Lynch or Bond to get back into their zone, to get back into their depth, and get their hand into the passing lane so that he can get a finger on the ball and we can see what can happen. So from a review perspective, I thought Jameis did well in all areas with the exception of his accuracy. He was behind on a lot of throws. Fortunately, they didn't hurt us too badly except for they seemed to hurt DeSean Jackson's feelings, and hopefully he'll get out of those. I thought the running backs played well. They generated good yards per carry. They picked up blitzes well, generally speaking, with the exception of a couple in the third quarter. Yeah, Nick, that's actually true. Linebackers, when they get into coverage, have got to get back. Now, you make that call because if you've got crossing routes, obviously your responsibility is there. But if the tight ends push up the field, you've got to get into that middle zone to make the pass difficult. Otherwise, it's just pitch and catch over the middle. Wide receiver side, we have a shiny new DeSean Jackson. He's got to come out to play sometime soon. He's got all the talent in the world. They're trying to get him the ball. I do not believe that Bill Belichick is going to let Mike Evans beat him because Mike Evans could have caught 40 passes against the Giants if we had had the opportunity to throw them, if Jameis had enough time or if he had seen him enough. Mike Evans is open every freaking down, guys. He is a beast. He is playing at a level of Julio Jones just without the yak. Belichick will have to take that away. I don't believe there's anyone in the field that can stay with DeSean. You make one connection with DeSean on a deep pass, and every defense we face for the next four games changes. I think this is the week that it happens. The tight end flexibility we've looked for is there. Cam Brate has found himself. O.J. Howard is continuing to improve, and I thought he looked good. Offensive line continues to gel. Like you said earlier, Chris, I think Donovan Smith had a good game. I think Sweezy had a good game. With the exception of the snaps, I thought the offensive line looked very solid. That's something that they can impose their will on. This front four of the Patriots I don't think is very good. I do think they can run on them, and if they can run on them, I think this could be one of those coming out games for us, and I hope it really is. I don't want to get all excited and hyped, but I think it could be good. On the defensive side, the defense did the things they needed to do, but not enough of them. They were able to contain Odell. They got some pressure on Eli, but they got to get the sacks. Like Mark said, you got to get to the quarterback and actually get him down or create enough pressure that it triggers it. TB one-ton Winston needs to get the ball out in front of him. Everyone agrees with you on that. I don't think there's any question. Wisdom says DeSean on the end around. They have that in the playbook. It's there. They can certainly whip that out. With this defense, it may even be one of those things that can work. I don't care. You want to get the ball into your playmaker's hands however you do it. And so I think getting DeSean the touches makes a lot of sense. On the defensive side, communication and such on the Patriots side is an area of note. Now, I've got some notes from the Patriots when I went back and watched the film. I said it earlier, the DBs like to play press. Get your predictive MVPs on offense and defense in here. And your score, if you want to put it in the chat room, you can do that. I'll try and scroll up in the Facebook chat as well. Got a sword to Grimes. Grimes gets a lot of love. I don't disagree. I think Grimes played his ass off. He reminded people why he is so well-respected. Everyone thinks that Conte is going to get completely housed by Gronk, which is probably not wrong if they leave him out there on an island. I don't think that's what they're going to do. AC says that Jameis needs to hit DeSean, and I think we all agree with that violently. The Patriots. Let's talk about that while you guys are putting your predictive offensive and defensive MVPs in here. I said that the defense liked to play press man. or they did versus Carolina. If they do that against the Bucks, it bodes well for us. It really does. Because James is getting more and more comfortable delivering the ball in that situation. We've talked about the linebacker depth already. I've talked about their front four not being particularly scary. Their DBs are in a state of disarray that makes last year's DBs here in Tampa look good. There were three times that I saw in that Carolina game where Funchess or someone was running wide the fuck open, and that just doesn't happen very often in the NFL. It happened with us with O.J. Howard because the linebacker bit on the hard action right and let him go across with no help on the backside. But I'm talking about in a non-play action, a non-boot scenario, guys were just supposed to cover someone and didn't. That is great for us. Absolutely great for us. If they continue to do it. Now, I can't imagine Belichick letting that go for very long, but that's what we see already or so far. I mentioned before they're susceptible to misdirection and screens, and I think that this could be a game where Charles Sims comes into it. He's still in the roster. You get in the ball out in space. As long as he doesn't fumble the ball, he can do some good things, and that's an opportunity that we should take advantage of. Rhett says he'd like to see Deshaun on the end around. And it's in the playbook, right? They've shown it in preseason. They showed it at training camp. It absolutely is there. Nick says in the chat room, Ayers or Spence are going to show something this week. Ayers has to step up. He had a couple of good plays last week, but he has to do more than that. So Chris in the chat room says the talent's there. The execution is shit with Pat's DBs. I don't disagree with that assessment at all. Jobu says D-Jack and G-Mac got a feeling this is the week for that connection. Those would be the predictive offensive and defensive MVPs. Thank you, Jobu. And Bucks Princess just wants G-Mac to pancake Brady. Listen, G-Mac was playing another level. I'd like to see him get a multiple sack game because he is just playing lights out football right now and busting people's asses. There were times where he embarrassed two offensive linemen, once three. And you just got to get the payoff. You're doing all the hard work, you know, and not getting the reward. And that's a damn shame. It is interesting because this is a color rush game and the Patriots are going to be wearing white, as Nikki just mentioned. If there is some rain, that could be fun to watch if they get torn up pretty good, which would be nice to see. On offense, Brady is incredibly patient. I was astonished by the fact that he went from spread to traditional smash mouth football. Gronk is just absolutely almost unstoppable, and they do like misdirections. I think our keys to the game this week, I said it last week, a number of points, I think we have to get to 32. We have to be able to get to Brady with four because I don't think that Mike Smith will send more than that. Because if he does, Brady will destroy you. Right now, if you've got Levante and Quan, you got guys in there that are unique and have that savvy, then you can do creative shit, right? You can do zone blitzes. You can do all sorts of cool stuff. I don't think we have that right now. I think that the front four, whoever they are, we need an Ayers or a Golston to step up and be that guy. A Ryan Russell, I don't give a shit who it is. Nick says James taking off and running is going to be the key. I agree with Chris. I think G-Mac's been doing it every week, but last week was just brutal. This offense has got to victimize what I consider an incredibly challenged defense, and I'm going to put a fourth key in here. You've got to convert in the fucking red zone. You cannot come away with field goals and missed field goals. It's just crazy. There's no excuse for it. They have all of the talent. Get out of your own way, guys. Get the ball in the end zone. And then I'd totally be fine if you go for two every time. Like, I won't lose an ounce of sleep if that's what you decide to do, Bucks. Predictive MVP on offense and defense for me, and I'll look in the chat room to see if you guys have some more. I agree, Nick, six cannon shots only. On offense, I'm going to go ahead and say this is going to be D-Jack's game just because I feel like there's a narrative that needs to be written here, and I think it may be this week that D-Jack is the one. Now, I think if D-Jack or Mike or shit, Cam, or any of these guys end up being the MVP from the offense, you have to probably look to Jameis Winston, who delivered the football. But I think it's going to be D-Jack's week. I think they're going to figure out a way to get him into this scoring zone. And I forgot who it was, but someone said he has a tendency to show up when the bright lights are on. And I don't disagree. He really does. He's one of those players who elevates his game when the game is on the line like that. On the defensive side of the ball, I would love to pick G-Mac, and I think G-Mac is going to be a safe pick for the entire fucking season because he is a beast. I am going to go with Beckwith, who I went with last week. I'm going to ride that horse until it bucks me. I think Beckwith understands how to play football. I think he is a uniquely physically talented player. I think he is going to be the guy that gets the tip. I think we are going to get a turnover. I see Kurt's got defensive MVP to McCoy. Chris has Hump on offense, which is not a bad call. The slot guy, and Hunt played well last week. I mean, you look at that guy, Jameis threw the ball around very, very well last week. He spread the ball around very, very well. Could be so much emphasis on the run that we get two or three connections deep for Dejack. You know, it's interesting. Offensive MVP, Famous Jameis from Kurt over in the chat room in Mixler. Oh, shit. I got to figure out this chat room thing in Facebook because it's kind of a pain in the ass. But score prediction. I think we need 32. I think we'll score more than that. I think the game is going to go down 38-31. Bucks win. I would love to see it worse than that. I would love to see the defense get a couple of turnovers with, you know, maybe Brady tries to pull one of those things where he does that pirouette and throws to the backside, and McClain, you know, one of our savvier guys, figures that out, deciphers it, makes the move, or a Beckwith makes the move in the flat. AO Train's got McCoy and Braid over there. It's good to see you, Art. But let's talk a little bit from a football perspective, from a fan perspective, about what this game means, and I'll let you guys get out of here. Doug Martin, Kurt doesn't think he'll be as productive as I think. I didn't assert how productive I thought he would be. I think Doug Martin's the best back on this football team, but he hasn't played, so I think it's important to get him the minutes. I think he'll play effectively, but I have no problem with Jacquizz Rodgers getting majority of the carries this week while we get him up to speed, to be honest. From a Buck fan perspective, everyone seems to want respect. ESPN called us pretenders. Everyone's all salty about someone not thinking that we're any good, and grouchy about how so-and-so didn't think that we could do this or that and the other, or they're giving too much credit to another team. You guys know I think that's bullshit. You know that I don't care. But you guys have every right to do. You can care about whatever it is you want to care about. If you want respect in sports, it is earned, not given. It is taken, not given. If the Buccaneers of this season want to get respect from anyone, they have to go beat teams like the Patriots. At home, on primetime, under the lights. So, Buccaneers of the Hard Knocks show, Buccaneers of all the potential, Buccaneers of, man, I think all this stuff has come together. Buccaneers of, oh my God, they're real, they beat the Bears. Buccaneers of, oh my God, they're terrible, blow the whole fucking thing up, they got crushed by the Vikings. Buccaneers of, I'm not sure, they beat the Giants, but the Giants can't even beat off. So, I mean, what does that really mean? This Buccaneers team has to go out there and make a statement. I said it about the Giants game, they had to go get the win. We said it about week one, they had to go do something against Chicago, a weak team, go stomp out a weak team. Nikki just said it very well in the chat room. We'll get respect from consistency. It's just another day at work, guys. Just today, the team across the field is wearing the Patriots helmet. Go beat them. Convert in the red zone. Walk out with a W. And then you can start building from there. And JPP cannot beat off, well, with one hand. I mean, maybe he's ambidextrous. I don't know. Some of the USF friends we have maybe could tell us. So anyway, I want to thank you guys for tuning into the show tonight. I want to thank everyone for coming. I want to thank the folks on Facebook. I want to thank the folks in Mixler. I want to thank you folks on the podcast as well. I'll get the podcast up immediately after the show. If you're coming out to the tailgate itinerary is posted where it's always posted, under the tailgate link, under current itinerary. We start at 5. We will be doing all the things we normally do. Big shout out again to Steps, to Steakhouse Elite, to Pepin Distributing, to Don Q, and to Tito's. We'll see all of our Buckaholic friends, our What the Buck friends, our Stick Carrier friends, our unaffiliated friends. We'll see some Patriots fans out there. All of this stuff is going to the Martin Gramatica Family Foundation, which I talked about earlier. So all the net proceeds are going to them. We're going to have a great time. The walk is going to start officially at 7:30. We're going to start breaking down at 6:55. We'll be broken down by 7:10 and clean. We'll be out there. We're walking up to the stadium together, raising some hell and having a good time. We will see you guys after the game next week talking about Bucks football, and I'll see you guys on Twitter as well. Thanks again, and go Bucks.
Yeah, yeah. Scoop. Yeah. Well, like Bugs Bunny, man, I think that's all, folks. My man, Oaks, just shut down another show. Same day, same time for the past 11 years. Guess what? Next week, we gon' be right here. Talking about the Bucks and having a good time. We give it to you straight, don't need to be between the lines. The beat drop hard every time I hit the nine. And if you didn't know it, this is Franco on the rhymes. Yeah. And
11 years strong, y'all. It's the What the Buck podcast. My man Derek, they call him Old School. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck, man. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck.